Welcome to my Blog Talk radio show, Love Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm a creative life balance coach and the author of The Art of Living a Life You Love. I'm happy to have my husband, Dudley Denader, back as my guest today. Dudley is a business owner, graphic designer, aerial and architectural photographer, writer, musician, singer, and songwriter. During the show today, I'll be playing six songs we've recorded with Robert Berry at Soundtech Studios: Holiday on Earth, Lost in Space, Found in Time, Waterfall, Ain't Nothing Better, Imagine, and Believe. Join us for a conversation about graphic design, photography, singing, songwriting, and what it means to live your music in your own ways. Welcome, Dudley.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I am excited to have you on the show, to have you back on the show. It's been 3 years since you were on last. It's amazing how fast time goes.
Yeah, truly.
And it's amazing how fast the decades go as well. You know, I can't believe that either. Being 2020.
Yeah, they never mentioned that.
What was that?
Well, they don't mention that when they talk about the length of your life. You know, when you're a young person, it seems like the years drag on forever, and you're waiting to get to be six. Seems like it's like four times the amount of time that it is between 56 and 57, that sort of thing. It just keeps getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So I feel like I've already lived most of my life. Now I'm just doing short segments of things that are just passing me by so quickly that sometimes it's hard to even admit that they happened.
Wow. Well, the time between 1980 and now has gone by in just such a flash. I can't even believe it. It's like when I look at it and think that, well, there was a decade, 1980 to 1990, 1990 to 2000, 2000 to 2010, and then 2010 to 2020, and thinking about what went on during each of those years, it's just amazing. And 1980 was when you started your design business, design and photography business. So I think that would be a good place to start. I want you to tell us a little bit about starting the business back then and what it was like. And, you know, mainly focus first on the first decade, 1980 to 1990.
Well, I remember working for a couple agencies, doing some outside work for McCann Erickson and I think one or two other agencies in San Francisco. And then I worked for a company called Murphy & Associates in Marin County in the later part of the 70s. I was a ski mechanic for FTC Ski and Sports in the major part of the 70s. Toward the end was when I started getting involved more in art and taking up that aspect of my life than I had previously. So that was an interesting period of time because I had just started really getting into designing for different people, Adolph Gasser, a number of people I designed logos for. And the next thing I knew, it was 1980, and I said, well, if I'm going to do this, I need to get a business license. I need to get all the ducks in a row and, you know, make sure that I have a resale license, all the different aspects of the business for a graphic designer. And I went ahead and did that. So that was really the beginning of being formally a designer. I had worked in graphic design, studied at Art Center, followed my sister, who was a graphic designer, and what she was into in the corporate realities of putting together annual reports, which she did a wonderful job of toward the end of her career. So that's where it all started. It was essentially working, gathering clients, and trying to live on a shoestring so that my expenses were low and so that I could offer the highest degree possible of service. And this, again, before computers. This is well before computers came into consideration. I think it was 81 or 82, we bought our first computer, which was an IBM. And I remember it cost me it was a 76K operating system. 76K, not megabyte, not gigabyte, kilobyte operating system. And I was one of the fortunate ones because I went all the way out and bought a color monitor, although very little of what you were doing on the computer you could actually see in real time for the first few years of the computer being in actuality a tool.
And I remember
finally
that.
Finally, after a couple of years of typesetting and using special characters, and really an aspect of coding was what it related to for us for typesetting. Finally, we got into WYSIWYG, which was, this is the fantastic aspect of actually being able to see what you see on screen is what you get. That's what WYSIWYG means. And this was just the most amazing thing for when it first happened, because all of a sudden this tool that was kind of cumbersome to learn did help, but the learning curve was so high. It became a viable tool at that point when you could actually see things that you were designing and be able to figure out what it could look like, because the aspect of changing things on a computer, trying different aspects of type and layout, dimensions, positive, negative space, all that stuff, it just became available when heretofore, most of it existed on little pieces of paper and in my mind. So that was really the biggest change, I think, in my life with regards to graphics, was when computers really came online as a viable tool that you could see on screen and be able to print that image as it came off the printer or sent to file or however you're going to use it.
It really is amazing when I think back to how different it was then. And I think it was, in 1985 is when I started working part-time with you in the graphic design business. And at that point, you were still doing a lot of the stuff with X-Acto knives and having the type set somewhere else and then having to cut it and paste it in. And then we got the computers. And I think Illustrator 88 was one of our first graphics programs we used, wasn't it? So I'm imagining that would be in around 1988 then, right?
Right, because the first computers were, for us IBMs, the Mac did exist in that little tiny form, and it really wasn't as viable until the Macintosh computer in its desktop format was defined and started to be produced. And that came along, I think we bought our first desktop Mac in 1988, and that's when Illustrator 88 was released. And that was the primary reason I got into it, was because of that program. Now, keep in mind, there was no Photoshop. There are no page layout programs at that point in time. Shortly thereafter, there was PageMaker that evolved into, I think, Cork, and then after a period of time, the Adobe side of things picked up and started developing InDesign. But at first, Illustrator 88 and the vector line was really where I was studying the actual computer technology that was available to me at the time. The Bezier line, being able to understand points of focus and vector lines as the direction of the vector forms the curve in the line, is probably the easiest way to say it. So I got all excited. I'd spent hours and hours and hours and working on all these things and doing them wrong and figuring out how to do them right and going through lessons. And most of the things I learned, I didn't get from manuals. I got it from all the other people I knew, the service bureaus and the other designers that had started using computers at the time. Because if you tried to read a manual at that point in time, it was still so completely involved in the jargon of the new computers that it took a while just to understand what people meant by this or that or the other thing. All the terminology was different. So at that point, then things started to solidify. Computers became really the tool for graphic arts and for graphic design. And then the other programs started evolving, page layout programs. Photoshop, I think, was probably the next one that caught my eye. And that's when I started to use the different layers and to understand how a photograph is represented in a computer rather than the way a vector line is represented. So those two things were the big things toward the end of the 80s that I was getting into. And that's when we really started producing things on the computer and sending them straight out and having them printed or being sent to various clients for their uses, depending on what it was. Sounds very vague. It is very vague because it has specific uses for each one of those things, and they're varying.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that was an interesting aspect of it at that point.
Well, I remember that really well because I remember thinking at the time that if we hadn't started using Quark Express to do page layout, which really excited me because I liked the idea of being able to lay out books and newsletters and things like that right on the computer and to be able to move things around and do that instead of cutting out things, which I didn't have the patience to do, all that careful cutting with the knives and going in the dark room and doing the other things that we had to do. So I was so thankful when the 90s came, and that was Xander was born January 1, 1990, so that was a huge change for us. And I was working with you. At that point, I started working with you full-time, and he used to be in the living room at the office, and he would be able to play, and I'd work on my computer. Remember that? That was so much fun. And
it really was a nice cohesive environment because I had my own little space upstairs. You had Xander downstairs in his little area that was cordoned off, but he seemed really happy and engaged there. He could watch TV if he wanted to. I think we started him on a computer when he was all like 3 years old.
I think so, too,
so yeah. It was amazing. But he always seemed such a happy boy. You just don't ever remember him being out of sorts or really crying a lot or anything like that. He just seemed really pleased to be where he was. And I remember many times he'd stand toward the back of the living room in the houseboat, and you could look past him and see out the window and see where our boat was moored right behind the houseboat, our powerboat, and then Mount Tam in the background, and it's just a gorgeous view. And he's standing there holding on to this little temporary gate with a big grin on his face. just amazing figures.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then it was in around 92 that we started doing the Trends in the Hotel Industry books for Gary Carr over at PKF Consulting in the city, working with he and Robert Mandelbaum, and then that was when I started doing the first big project layout with the books was with them, and then I just really loved doing that. That has always been so much fun for me, and you'd always design beautiful covers for them, and it just, you know, it was a lot of fun. And then
it was really an interesting thing because their company, with regards to the reports they were generating, was kind of fragmented. They'd have a kind of an interesting one here and then one that was kind of falling off the wagon over here. And they just hadn't been a cohesive force. And then when they hired me, I started really thinking design, and, you know, really putting myself into their being a worldwide really leader in hotel reporting technology. They were one of the first groups that actually used, they were actually accountants for many different hotels all across the U.S. in the accounting business. So they would have all the figures for what worked, what didn't work, where the revenues were going, what was returning revenues properly, what was, a hole in the water that was eating too much money. And after a few years of doing this, I think quite a few years, really 30, 40 years, because they started this in 1936. So toward the time at the end of the, or in the 90s, when we started working with them, things had really changed. And then computers came in at the same time. So I could design things and was doing things that were really completely different than other things that were being done at the time, because I was one of the few people that was starting out as this new platform emerged on the computer and using all the bells and whistles and tools and stuff like that that I could get my hands on and I could understand to promote their business on a more global aspect. So it was a kick in the pants. And to see the way the book started, a very difficult book. This is not just text, but it's charts and tables and graphs and all these separate little elements that all define the way that the reporting of the hotel industry was portrayed year after year.
And
you
did
a wonderful job of pulling that all together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And understandable. And then on a budget, because it was a difficult thing for PKF to pull together a huge budget for this thing. They just didn't have it. So everything had to be done with regards to the monetary value of it and its return. But
yeah,
it was really an interesting time, and it plugged in beautifully for PKF and what is now CBRE at that time.
Yeah. And
PKF,
they're still clients
the
of ours, which is amazing after all these years, and still looking forward each year to working on their annual book. And then also during the 90s was when Xander started going to Basish Elementary School, and we started working with the Kentfield School Directory, or Kentfield School Foundation, working on putting together the Kentfield School Directory, which was really fun. And that was a huge project with, you know, over 325 advertisers. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was another one of those projects where it was a combination of texts and advertising and lists and compilations and graphs and charts and all the other things, very similar, not similar really to trends, but certainly as diverse in the makeup of the interior of the text of the book. So that was really an incredible thing. And you did that for what, 8-10 years? So it was way past the time that Xander was in school.
Yeah, I started on it, I think, in 97, helping out. And then the last one I did was in 2006 while he was in Redwood High School. But, you know, the time is going by so incredibly fast already, and we have so many things to go over with the music as well, and I want to get to that too. But from 2000 through 2010, we worked on the Kentfield School Directory, but we also started recording songs down at Soundtech Studios during that time. And Xander ended up finishing Redwood High School, and then he went on to college. So that decade was a biggie, you know.
Yeah, no, there was a lot going on. And, boy, he was involved in baseball. I was commissioner of baseball for 4 years, as well as all the other stuff that was going on. He was involved in theater, as well as baseball and all his other extracurricular activities. So, yeah, it was jammed in there. There was a lot of things going on at the same time.
Yeah. But it was around 2003 that we started going down to Soundtech and recording some songs, and then Xander ended up recording some songs down there for the first album. His first two songs were at the bonus tracks on the first album, and then he and you worked together on the other songs for D2, the second album. And, God, it was so much fun going down with you guys to Robert's studio, Soundtech Studios in Campbell, and recording the songs and each track being laid, and it was awesome.
Now that was amazing to see that, how that came together. We had, once a month, we had kind of a standing time for us to go down to Soundtech. So as soon as I'd finished one of the songs, and we'd listen to it copious times on the way back from the studio and so on and so forth, then I'd start thinking about the next song we wanted to do. And I'd talk to Xander, and what do you want to do? You got any ideas? And oftentimes what he would do is, he was very involved with learning the guitar at the time and loved to play lead guitar. So he'd find a lick, a little musical sequence of notes that he would put together that he thought was interesting. And this happened to, I don't know, quite a few songs that we ended up writing together. He'd come up with a lick. Then I go, oh, that's really cool. And then what if we did this to kind of pull it together? And he go, oh, yeah, that's great. And then what does that remind you of? Well, it reminds me of, in one case, it was the song Running. And it just sounded like Running, you know, mm-hmm. like that kind of a pattern. And then, okay, well, what makes sense for the lyrics? Where's the hook? You know, what's the hook that's going to bring us to? And then so we throw these ideas back and forth. And we did that time after time, month after month. And we wrote an entire album's worth of material. 13 songs, I think, on the second album. So
yeah.
And well, I'm so proud of him to do all that at the same time and still retain a 4.25 average in school.
Yeah, and at high school, and then he got a merit scholarship to go to Chapman University. So in 2008, we did the the mastering of the D2 album, and then took him down to college down at Orange County at Chapman University to study film production, and that ended up being a whole new reality for us too, because all of a sudden, instead of having him be the main focus here, we had just the two of us, and back to working on the graphic design and that sort of thing. And then in 2009, I wrote the lyrics for Imagine, and you wrote the music. And then in 2010, 10 years ago in January, Robert Berry did the very first recording of the music for it for us, and we just had some rough vocals in there at the time. And then December 2011 was when we went down, and that was my first time recording a song at Soundtech, and I was so excited and so nervous. Oh. But that was so much fun, and so I want people, when they listen to that song later, to realize that was my first time ever doing it, and I was a little bit less scared the second time when we did Believe in 2016, but anyway, it's been so much fun. We've had, I think they say time flies when you're having fun, and oh boy, has it been, because, you know, we all have so much fun, and I wanted to have somebody creative that I married that would be a partner in creativity, and boy, did I get that in spades. And Xander's so creative too. The two of you, it's like, whoa, major creativity. And the other thing is, oh, I just have to say that loving, kind, and creative, those are my top three things in people that I enjoy being with. And you guys are all three. You're loving, kind, and creative.
Well, we can be. We have our moments.
We all have our moments. We all do. Well, anyway, let's talk a little bit about, get into the music and talk a little bit about the Holiday on Earth album. And that album, I'm going to play three songs from that album. So talk a little bit about why we named it Holiday on Earth. Excuse me. And then the first song I'm going to play is actually Holiday on Earth. So talk about that song as well.
Well, it was interesting because when you first had me go to that class, Jason Dauman, who's an AR guy from Los Angeles, given a learning annex class, and I went to it with a few songs in my belt that I had written a long time ago, back in the 70s. And you had said, you know, you should get your music out there again, live your music, you know, don't let it die with your loose music in you, as Wayne would have said. And so that's the beginning of that whole thing came then. And then furthermore, you know, as we went into it, I started looking at aspects. And this was actually, Holiday on Earth is one of the last songs that we wrote for the first album. And you had asked me to write it. And I thought, wow, this is an amazing story of Uncle Earl, Earl Nightingale, and his thought that we are all spiritual beings having a holiday on Earth. And kind of when you think about that in that sort of a reverse order, it makes a whole lot of sense. And it frees up a lot of the feelings to be able to take action rather than to be afraid of whatever is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. And that song is a labor of love. And I just really adore that song. I like the way that it plays. It's a shuffle rhythm, so it's a real upbeat. And it just turned out really well with your, you know, additions and little edits and asides. I think it was one of the most successful songs that we produced together for any of the albums we've done.
Well, you know, I remember giving you a list of the feelings that I wanted to have in the song, you know, and the kind of the feelings and images that I wanted to have in it, and that what I would think of when I'd read Earl Nightingale's quote about how he would say, "You and I are kind on a kind of holiday on Earth. Out of the mystery we appear to share our lives with other living things on this small blue blessed planet," etc. And you did such an amazing job taking my list of ideas and turning them into incredible lyrics. And I think right now what I'd like to do is play the song, and then we can talk about it a little bit more and then go on to the next song, because we do have to be mindful of time. But
well, yeah, boy, we're almost half through. Whew.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
It goes by really fast. So anyway, here's Holiday on Earth from the album Holiday on Earth by the Donators. Yes. Yes, I am. Celebrating. Oh, Dudley. I love that song. And remember how Robert was when he was recording it, how he was bouncing around all day?
Yeah, he really did. The sound quality was kind of iffy on that from listening to it over on this side. You may want to mute yourself during the next song, just as a heads up.
Okay. Anyway, during the next song is going to be Lost in Space, Found in Time. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that one?
Oh, this is a song that I wrote, gosh, a long, long time ago. It was mid-70s, I think it was 74, 75. And I was playing with a group called Ambrose at the time, and we were playing at a small little place in Fairfax called the Sleeping Lady Cafe. And we had played this song. It was at that time, it was called Climbing. It wasn't called Lost in Space, Found in Time. And I ended up revisiting the lyrics when I rewrote it in the early 2000s for the album, the first album. And what it related to was the aspect of a relationship that you visit, but then you're not sure if it's going to work out. And then you spend the time trying to really reorient yourself, and then you discover that if you look back on it, that you can pull this all together and enjoy, you know, whatever it is that life brings to you, as well as the relationship that was part of this whole thing. It doesn't speak in real time in terms of giving a specific message, but that's kind of the overall thought that the song embodies. Mm-hmm. And when I rewrote the lyrics, it made a lot more sense to me. And that's why I then renamed it Lost in Space, Found in Time, because you had said this is one of the songs you'd love to hear recorded. Mm-hmm. And all I had was just, you know, playing it acoustically for you, or, you know, putting it down on a cassette tape or something like that. It was terrible quality. So this is the first chance I had to have, you know, Robert take a look at this and really help me flesh out the entire sound and make it really sound the way it should sound.
It sounds amazing too. And the one thing I wanted to say about the quality of the sound of the songs, it'll sound better when people are hearing it and the recording of it anyway than it does right now to us while we're doing it.
Yeah.
So
I'd
anyway,
about that.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to play Lost in Space, Found in Time next, and that one's just a little over 3 minutes. I love this song so much. Here we go.
Dream.
love that song so much. I'm so glad I talked you into getting that recorded and that Robert was the one that did it. And I will always remember how much fun we had with him doing that and going back in the car, listening to it over and over again. That was so much fun. Dudley?
Sorry, I had myself on mute. I didn't want to interrupt.
You had yourself on mute? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't want to, you know. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so you could hear what I was saying, though, right?
Yes, indeed, I did. I did.
Okay. Well, anyway, that was...
So I was just saying that's one of the songs that was really well received by a lot of different sources after we recorded it, and it was one of the first ones we recorded, too. But I've always enjoyed that song a lot. I like, especially the bridge. I just love the way it goes in and out and takes you on this journey. So it's one of my favorite songs.
And also, another interesting thing about that song is the picture in the slideshow of you and Xander and me singing at Phoenix. That was the first time I got to sing live with the three of you, and we sang that song.
Right.
Lost in Space, Found in Time, that day. That was so incredible, or night. It was so incredibly fun.
Yeah.
Okay, the next song that I have queued up to play is Waterfall, which is also from the Holiday on Earth album. It's the last song just before Xander's two bonus songs. And that's a really different song, and that you did a long, long time ago. So tell people a little bit about this song. It's just instrumental. It's not lyrics with this one.
Well, I learned to play guitar when I was, I don't know, 10, 12 years old. I played ukulele first, so that might have been in the 8 to 10 range or 8 to 11 range. And then my hand got large enough to play guitar when I was about 12, and I started playing an electric guitar. And I played in groups and so on and so forth. But when I went to college, I had taken my Jazzmaster, which is the Fender that I had played all through my groups in high school, with me. But I wanted an acoustic guitar, and I really liked the sound of a 12-string. I had never really played a 12-string that much before, but in a few of the times that I had, I really liked the fullness of the sound. And then I started getting involved in finger picking. I learned how to play a banjo, and that's a different style of finger picking than finger picking a guitar, which leads with the thumb instead of the first finger on a banjo, leads with the first finger. So I got involved in finger style, and I started picking out various different songs that I thought would sound good in finger style. And that's where this song originated. And it's just a compilation of different thoughts that came through my mind that I interlinked and made into this piece, which I originally called the symphony, but that has no sense at all because it doesn't refer to a symphony orchestra at all. But it does have a little bit of a classical feel to it. So this is the song that I started playing this when I was in college. So this would have been in 65, 66, somewhere around in that era that I started writing this. And I refined it until I recorded it for this album, which was in 2003 or so. And that the interesting thing about this particular recording is I did it on my home studio and then took it down to Robert to add some effects in, which I think he added a concert effect studio sound to it, but he didn't change any of the notes. And this is all one time through, played one time through, because I didn't understand the recording software well enough that I could edit it. So I figured I'd just play it until I got it right all the way through.
And they ended up using that one. Yeah, I know. Xander's so impressed with that. He said we had to play Waterfall because of that. And also Waterfall was, at the time Symphony, was one of the first songs that I heard you play when we first got together back in the early 80s. And actually in 79 and then 80. So,
you named it Waterfall. I was trying to figure out a name for it, and I couldn't think of anything that really sounded like it. And you said, you know, there's that one, that's the second or the third movement of the song, and it does sound like a waterfall. And as soon as you said that, I went, that's it. That's the name. That's perfect.
All right. Well, so, let's listen to that one. It's about 3.5 minutes long, and then we'll talk about the next song. So Waterfall by Dudley Denater on the Holiday on Earth album. Thank you. Dudley, that is so amazing, that song. It's so beautiful.
I think I play it better now than I used to.
Well, you've had even more practice, but, you know, it always sounds beautiful.
A lot of years of practice.
And I remember so many times you playing that up at our family's place up in Shasta County and out by the fire and roasting marshmallows and hearing Waterfall and also Ghost Riders and some of the other songs. It sort of brings back a lot of those really fun memories as well.
Yeah, cowboy songs.
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Well, Waterfall's not a cowboy song, but...
No.
The Ghost Riders, and I'm an Old Cowhand from the Rio Grande. That was really fun, too. Well, I wish we had time to play even more songs from that album. I wanted to play one of Xander's first two songs, Feeling Numb, but we'll do that another time when I have him on the show. I want to have him on and play some of his songs. So we're going to jump over to the second album, the Donator's second album, and we are going to play a song of Xander's from that. We had a hard time figuring out which one of your songs, and we already had some of your songs, so we decided to play this one because we love it, and it's one of our favorites on the album. And what else do you want to say about Ain't Nothing Better by Xander before I play it?
Well, yeah, it's one of my favorite songs that Xander's written, although he's written quite a few that are really quite wonderful. The interesting thing about this song was that he was stuck on a bridge, and we had to get the song finished because we were going to master it and then finish it, and there was just one of the last things that we did. So I wrote the bridge for the song, and I've since talked to him, and I think he's actually improved upon it, but that was one of the most interesting bridges that I've come up with, and I really enjoyed that too. So I had a slight modification in Xander's song and helped him write that part of it. But this is truly from him and, you know, his song aside from that. And he did a beautiful job of explaining a relationship that he was going through at the time. But anyway, you can see that through the song.
Yeah, and I also have to say that I just love listening to it in the car and singing along with it, too. Anyway, here we go. Ain't Nothing Better by Xander Donator from D2, the second album.
Nothing worse than a poke in the eye. Ain't nothing worse than saying goodbye. Ain't nothing worse than to see you cry at my shoulder. Ain't nothing worse than to trip and to fall and see it all come down. Ain't nothing worse than to leave a city except to leave a little town. If I had to live without you, I don't know what I would do. Ain't nothing worse than
hearing that song, and when I hear it, I feel like he's talking about us, too. And when I sing it, I feel like I'm talking about you and Xander.
Yeah. That's a great song. I really like his. I like his voice, I think, better than mine. I keep saying that, but it just sounds good.
You know what? I like both of your voices, and they are very different, which is amazing how different that they are. But I love them both. So we only have 9 minutes left. Can you believe it?
I know. We're going so quickly.
Yeah. And Imagine is the next song that I wanted to play. And I just wanted to say that that's based on my book, The Art of Living Life You Love. And I wrote the lyrics for the song as a poem originally, and it wouldn't even be a song if you hadn't turned it into one for me. So I want to say thank you for doing that. It was
that was you wrote that lyric though, and I remember you putting it out to your your friends and your
friends,
immediate friends, and whomever is on your list, and you got probably more comments on that poem than anything else you'd ever written. I mean, people just came out of the woodwork and said, wow. And so I thought, I got to put lyrics or music to this, rather. So it was a pleasure to do that. And I thought this turned out rather well, too.
Yeah, I love it. I totally do. Anyway, I'm going to play Imagine. And it's about imagining your life as you want it to be. It's a little different than
And now Margo sings this song with me instead of having me singing it solo.
Well, Imagine we're both on, but Holiday on Earth I sing with you too. Here's Imagine.
Imagine it as you want it to be. Imagine what you want to see. Imagine what you will hear. Imagine who will be near. What we talk about can become our reality. How we might do to communicate effectively. Imagine what you will feel. Imagine what you want to be real. Imagine all the fun you can have. Imagine how good it feels to laugh. Move beyond into the mystery, flow with the stream. Enjoy the journey of your dream, of your dream. Imagine what you love. Imagine all the help that comes from above. Imagine where you will go. Imagine how you will grow. What we talk about can become our reality. Our reminder to communicate effectively. Always feeling free. Imagine being all you can be. Imagine what you're here to give. Imagine a life you love to live.
One of the things I have to say about that song is that it's meant to be like affirmations, and so it's best if you sing along with it. And that was really originally the idea, was for people to sing along with it and start imagining their life the way they want it to be, instead of worrying about the things that they think can go wrong, to focus on what can go right and what you want to have happen.
Yeah, amazing difference there, isn't it?
Yeah.
In
and that
your thoughts, I mean, if you direct them that way.
Yeah, and that brings us, we've got 4 minutes left into Believe, which we have just enough time to play that and barely talk about it. And that one is so important, because the thing is, you have to believe things can happen in order for them to happen. And that even was true with meeting you and us getting together and being together all these years. Also, me being able to believe that someday I could sing with you, which was like so scary at first, but now it's just fun. Anyway, this is Believe. It's 3.5 minutes long, and then we'll just barely have time to say bye after that. So here we go. Basically, all the time we have left. We have 30 seconds left, Dudley, to say bye to everyone.
Well, we have 1:05, according to this.
According to the Blog Talk Radio show, the live show is going to end in 20 seconds, but I think we'll have a little bit longer. So do you have something you want to leave the audience with for the recording?
Oh, it's been an incredible life with you. I've not regretted anything I've done. I've been a creative person and followed my dream, and really had extraordinary luck and wonderful clients and people that helped me and supported me. And you're the main one. And the two of you are the light of my life, and I'm looking forward to the next 60, 40, whatever it ends up being.
I am too. I'm really glad that you came into my life and that we've had so many Valentine's Days together and so many fun times with Xander. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping me live my music, and thank you for living your music, Dudley. Everyone out
my
there.
My pleasure. I love you.
I love you too. Everyone out there, live your music. Get out there and do it. Do it now. Live your music. Bye for now, everyone.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.